Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I'm Pat Johnston, and I have to admit, I never thought I'd live to see the day where the Detroit Lions are truly the toast of the entire state. I have to tell you, it was fun watching them on Monday night and the fans at Ford Field when they defeated the Los Angeles Raiders in front of that nationally televised audience. And I don't know about you, but I feel like the Lions are beginning to feel like America's team. Like, really America's team, not the Dallas Cowboys. No, really, they are America's team. A long way to go still. They've only reached the halfway point of this season, but I'm hoping the bye week gives them some good rest and gets some guys healthy for the stretch run, a run that might be remembered here for a very long time. Hey, thanks again for listening to another episode, and thanks to all the likes and comments you send me as I work to publicize the progressives who've been working hard to turn Michigan around from 40 years of disastrous Republican rule and mismanagement. And coming up here in just a few, I'll talk with a couple of people who've been advocating and organizing ways to improve and revitalize our public education system in both the city of Detroit, but also across the entire state of Michigan. Now, a couple of weeks ago, if you recall, while talking with Democratic State Representative Dylan Wagella from Garden City, he mentioned an organization called 482 Forward. And I decided to look them up and learn about what they are all about. And 482 Ford is working on fixing the gross inequities when it comes to our education system here in Michigan, thanks to years and years of Republicans working hard on behalf of the DeVos family to defund public schools. Coming up in a few, Molly Sweeney and Arlissa Hurd from 482 Forward will join me to talk about their fight to reverse that trend, because in the end, if we ultimately want people staying here or relocating here, we have to provide kids with a strong education system. So stick around for that discussion. And it's relevant to what my overall theme to this week's opening is all about: reinvesting in the people and their families. You know, for most of my adult life, thanks in part to corporate media outlets, we were told that businessmen were the smart ones, and we always had to listen to them. I remember one time driving with a friend of mine while at Central Michigan back in the 1990s. I was a broadcasting major while he was a business major. And yes, he bought that whole right-wing capitalism religion hook, line, and sinker. But while I don't exactly remember what we were talking about or arguing about, I remember that his retort to something that I said was this: Pat, businessmen are rarely wrong. They rarely get anything wrong. Let them do what they do best and get the government out of their way. I mean, I remember that. I remember that so clearly. To which I probably responded with, like we did in the Great Depression. But a few years later, while working my first radio job in Ionia, Michigan during the early 2000s, I realized how much that right-wing Republican economic myth-making machine had indeed permeated throughout not just my listening area, but throughout the state and the country. Ronald Reagan and the corporate wing of America got the people convinced that taking any kind of welfare meant that you were lazy, and that if you didn't work for what you earned, then you were useless. That's why Reagan's usage of the mythical black welfare queen struck with so many white Americans who ended up voting against their economic interests by backing Republicans. And yes, Reagan and his people found an effective way to divide working Americans through race when he said,
"In Chicago, they found a woman who holds the record. She used 80 names, 30 addresses, 15 telephone numbers to collect food stamps, Social Security, veterans benefits for four non-existent deceased veterans' husbands, as well as welfare. Her tax-free cash income alone has been running $150,000 a year."
Now, in that 1976 speech, Reagan was talking about a person named Linda Taylor, and she was convicted of welfare fraud in Chicago. She was also suspected and arrested for other crimes, including murder. But for some reason, that info didn't make it in Ronald Reagan's speech. I suppose to the right wing, one welfare scammer was far scarier than a kidnapper or accused murderer. Regardless, right-wing Republicans found their scapegoat in building up the myth that blacks and Hispanics were the only groups of people receiving economic assistance, when in fact, we all know that white Americans overwhelmingly benefited from government assistance. And as history shows us, like FDR's New Deal programs, white Americans benefited from those programs more than people of color. FDR's programs helped create the middle class as we knew it, like introducing Social Security, for example, which right-wing corporate forces have been trying to dismantle for years. And then another Democratic president, Lyndon Johnson, unveiled his Great Society Initiative, which, unlike some of FDR's New Deal programs, the Great Society Initiatives allow black and brown Americans to utilize those programs and help pull themselves out of poverty. According to Business Insider, the proportion of black people below the poverty line went from 55% in 1960 to just 27% in 1968. The Great Society plans were working and working as designed, working as planned, pulling all people up. And when it came to welfare fraud or whatever the right wing called it, the numbers show that the fraud rate within the SNAP or food stamps program is about 0.1%. 0.1%! But the right wing got its supporters buying the line that government assistance was wrought with fraud and that the only people who relied on it were people of color. But it's more than that. It's also this notion of pull yourself up from your bootstraps mentality that corporate America pounded and pounded into the subconscious of our country, which really struck with many Americans too. And sure, if you have dreams that you want to chase or want to purchase something like a toy or a game, whatever, sure, things have value and you have to earn those. And I'm reminded of what the character in the English novels called Poldark. The main character was Poldark, and he's once asked, "Do you believe in equality?" And he says, "No, but I believe in equal opportunity." I think that's what all progressives believe in, equal opportunity. However, when it comes to food, heating, cooling, shelter, clothing, education, you see, those are needs, not wants. And since we're living in a consumer economy, everyday Americans have been finding it harder to afford the basic necessities of life. It's hard to get equal opportunity if you cannot afford those basic necessities. That's why I completely supported ending expensive and life-altering college student loans, which skyrocketed for a number of reasons, like cuts in state spending, university misspending, and more. All these things hampered a new student's chances at actually being able to afford a home, a car, which only further hurts their abilities to purchase other things. And again, state spending on colleges and universities were higher decades ago, but Republican cuts put more of that onus on the students and on their families. It's this whole Republican pull yourselves up from your bootstraps, which is hurting this country and the state of Michigan. And like I said, back when I was on AM radio in Ionia, this myth was in hyperdrive with Michigan Republican officials that I interviewed, but also with some Democrats. You have to remember, back in 1996, Democratic President Bill Clinton echoed Republican Reagan's words when it came to welfare, as he promised, remember, Bill Clinton promised to end welfare as we know it. And Clinton changed the nation's welfare programs by drastically reducing them. Again, Business Insider reports, before Clinton, about 75% of people who were eligible for welfare were receiving it. But by 2000, 4 years after Clinton's program was enacted, only about 25% were using it. To say this mindset damaged our country is a severe understatement, but it stuck through most of the 2000s until the Great Recessions of 2007 and 08. The same people who preached hard work, hard work, hard work, and to pull yourselves up from your bootstraps were suddenly the ones begging you and I to bail them out. After gutting effective New Deal protections against risky banking and investments, the bankers failed, although we were told they were too big to fail. So They counted on us to bail them out with hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars. The very people preaching that we couldn't expect any types of government assistance because that meant being lazy were the same ones begging for government assistance themselves when they asked government to end the inheritance tax. Even better, these elites were able to get hardworking Americans to argue on behalf of their right to funnel their inheritance down to their kids, hoping that they wouldn't be called hypocrites for doing the exact same thing they accuse people gaining government assistance of being lazy. Wait, why was it being lazy getting government assistance, but those rich kids weren't being lazy just getting inheritance money? These same people were able to get corporate and high-end taxes drastically cut while relying on the rest of us to cover the difference. And now, the MAGA right-wing Republican House of Representatives is trying to tie funding for Israel and Ukraine to their desire to gut IRS funding. You see, Democratic President Joe Biden and the then Democratic Congress passed the Inflation Reduction Act back in 2021, which provided extra funding to the IRS so it could go after wealthy tax cheats and to also improve customer service. And as the Washington Post's Greg Sargent dutifully reports, to the MAGA corporate right-wing chagrin, the new funding is doing exactly what it's designed to do. The IRS has collected nearly $38 million from 175 tax delinquents. And by the way, why are those always touting themselves to be for law and order, always trying to skirt our tax laws? I mean, if you love America, you should love doing your civic duty by paying your taxes, right? Oh, and the IRS has also announced more plans to go after wealthy tax cheats here in the future. And as former Clinton Labor Secretary Robert Reich tweeted this week, the data shows that 1.4 million wealthy Americans are evading nearly $66 billion in federal taxes. The 2,000 highest earning tax dodgers alone owe $923 million. There's a very simple reason Republicans want to keep the IRS underfunded so rich tax cheats can get away with it. Hear, hear, Robert Reich. MAGA claims to be for you and I, but we know better. They're for corporate America, which is why the corporate media wants Trump back as president. He brings in ratings for them, and they'll accept a little fascism for profits. Oh, and also for tax cuts. However, working Americans right now are no longer going along with what the right wing is touting.
For the third time, I am honored to announce that we have yet another victory in our stand-up strike. Your bargaining committee worked hard through the night, and early this morning, we reached a tentative agreement with GM. Once again, we have won several astonishing victories. For the past several weeks, analysts and pundits were crying that our union was going too far, that we were demanding too much. We didn't listen to them, and we never let up. The result is one of the most stunning contract victories since the sit-down strikes in the 1930s.
That was United Auto Workers President Sean Fain announcing the historic UAW victory as it has agreed to tentative deals with the big three Detroit automakers, thereby ending the union's 46-day-long strike. Ken Coleman and Kyle Davidson of Michigan Advance report, the tentative agreement with GM includes 25% in base wages increases through April 2028 and will cumulatively raise the top wage by 33% compounded with estimated cost of living adjustments to over $42 an hour. The starting wage will increase by 70% compounded with estimated COLA to over $30 an hour, according to a UAW press release. I mean, the UAW showed solidarity and strength, but also effective messaging. Yes, it also got rid of its corrupt leadership, which was always cozying up to management. And as one union member told Michigan Advance, and I quote, "You know, there's too many times I think the union and company are too close together. We gave up things years ago, and it's time to give some back. I'm going to retire this year, so some of that stuff isn't going to affect me. I mean, the immediate raise, that'd be good for me and all that. I'm just glad for the people behind me." Hear, hear. I never thought I'd see the UAW score such a powerful victory, but it's following the trend of the people demanding better pay and demanding that government and corporations start reinvesting in them. Oh, and while I'm at it, by the way, here, Republican U.S. Senate candidate Mike Rogers of Florida. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not Florida. He's running in Michigan, I guess. He had this to say on Twitter or X, and I'm going to quote, "Very glad that the UAW has reached agreements with the big three. Now we must put an end to Biden's ridiculous EV mandates that are forcing us to rely on China." That is not what this strike was about one bit. And Mike Rogers, and to all Republicans out there, if you really cared about the UAW's fight against the big three Detroit automakers, where were you during those 46 days? I didn't see you on the picket lines. You guys were all MIA. You guys are charlatans. You are fakes. You don't care about the people. You just care about management. Get out of here. Again, I never thought I'd see the day where the UAW would score such a huge victory, but it is following the trend of the people demanding better and demanding that government and corporations start reinvesting in them. For example, in Michigan, Democrats passed a bill, and Governor Gretchen Whitmer just signed it into law, bringing Affordable Care Act protections into state law. So no matter what, those protections are state law, regardless of what the right-wing Supreme Court rules. Again, Michigan Advanced reports that insurance providers will be prohibited from denying someone coverage based on their gender identity or sexual orientation, denying coverage based on pre-existing conditions, and from rescinding someone's coverage. Providers would also be required to allow dependents to remain on their parents' insurance until age 26, would ban annual and lifetime dollar limits on healthcare, and would also ensure access to coverage for specified services such as hospitalization, pregnancy, and emergency services. I mean, this seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? It's putting people first. It's helping reinvest in people, or as Representative Dylan Wegela called it, compassion economics. And you know what? That's kind of like the landmark RX Kids program in Flint that I talked about here recently. I mean, thanks to hard work by so many, including Dr. Mona Hanna-Atisha, starting next year, every pregnant person in Flint will have a chance to receive a one-time payment of $1,500, followed by $500 payments per month for the first year of their child's life. There's no means testing. This is a program meant to help struggling families, and similar pilot programs around the country, around the world, show that this kind of program works. For example, there was a Denver program which gave people $1,000 a month, and I'll be darned, it cut down poverty, homelessness, and increased employment. You don't say. I'm shocked. The people of Flint were wronged by corporations and the government through the years. And then there was the Republican Governor Rick Snyder Flint water crisis a decade ago, which kids drank poisoned water, which will affect them for years to come. Not to mention, expectant mothers were drinking that water too. But rather than giving away lavish corporate tax breaks to DTE or Enbridge Oil or Betsy DeVos and her family, maybe reinvesting in our kids and parents is perhaps the best kind of start. It is, dare I say, a pro-life start. It's similar to the historic spending that Democrats passed in Michigan for education, which also includes free breakfast and lunch for all students. I mean, that was a major victory and will pay dividends completely. But that being said, that's only one school budget, and so much more is needed to be done after years of gutting public schools across the state, including Detroit. Coming up, Molly Sweeney and Arlissa Hurd of 482 Forward will join me to discuss that and more. And let me say a quick thanks to my good friend Rich for all of his work with leftoflansing.com. Rich, you put up a heck of a Halloween display this year, and happy belated birthday, my friend. Please visit leftoflansing.com and subscribe as well. You're listening to LOL,
a podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
If you'd like to continue the conversation, please email me at any time. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Well, I teased that Arlissa Hurd and Molly Sweeney from 482 Forward will be joining me here this week. However, Molly just contacted me and had some sudden scheduling conflicts that she could not get out of and had to cancel for this week. So I'm hoping to have both of them on next week so we can talk more about all the work that 482 Forward's been doing and how they are trying to fight for the compassion economics that are needed to help the state move forward in the long run. In the meantime, I'd like to continue talking about how the UAW's victory is now beginning to pick up momentum across the country. And then I'd like to highlight how the DeVos Finance Mackinac Center is pushing the partial birth abortion lie. Now, the UAW's victory against the big three Detroit automakers is already beginning to send shockwaves across the country. More Perfect Union on Twitter posted on Wednesday that Toyota says it's immediately raising the wages of its non-union factory workers. This comes right after the UAW won historic tentative agreements with Ford, GM, and Stellantis. A strong labor movement even helps workers who aren't union yet. I agree with More Perfect Union. And you know what? I'll be darned. You mean to tell me that other workers, other non-union workers, are watching what the UAW won for its workers and they want the exact same thing? They want to be treated fairly and respectfully? You don't say. You see, this is why Michigan is the perfect roadmap. It is the perfect roadmap for other states to follow when it comes to workers' rights. Once Michigan Democrats won back power in the state legislature, they rolled back the then Republican Governor Rick Snyder's right to work for less law, giving power back to the unions to fight for living wages and stable futures for their families. We shouldn't be surprised one bit that we're starting to see workers from other companies push for similar benefits, and I don't think it'll be long until we begin seeing non-union companies like Toyota or even, Tesla slowly become union companies. We shall see. And as the Washington Post Greg Sargent wrote this week about UAW President Sean Fain's messaging victory, he said, again and again, UAW President Sean Fain has stressed that this strike is not about his workers' bottom lines, but about the country's class structure. He regularly lambasts the drastic upward redistribution of wealth of the past few decades, blaming top-down assaults on workers' bargaining powers and the systematic erosion in wages they have wrought. The billionaire class, Fain said recently, has spent decades convincing workers that we are weak, that it's futile to fight, and that workers should be grateful for the scraps that they decide to give us. Fain relentlessly argues that the strike is about defeating an idea that what's good for the wealthy is synonymous with what's good for our country because it showers benefits on everyone else. Sargent is spot on right there. You know, I mentioned former Michigan Congressman Mike Rogers last segment. Rogers, of course, is running for Michigan's open U.S. Senate seat next year after spending years living off the government dole as a defense contractor in Florida. But Mike Rogers knows what Michiganders want, right? Anyway, he released a statement saying he cares so much for the UAW's victory. But now, he says, we have to now kill the EV car movement. You see, Rogers and the entire Republican Party knows full well that this strike had nothing to do with the big three moving towards EV cars. It was the right wing's futile attempts to divide workers, and it failed. Failed big time. Speaking of failing, Donald Trump. How come he hasn't released a statement on his Truth Social or stood up at some podium congratulating the UAW's victory? I'm hearing crickets, Donald. Where are you? Wait. You mean to tell me his little performative speech here in Michigan last month wasn't about showing support and caring for working people? Do you mean to tell me that Trump never cared about unions and never cared about workers? You don't say. And one more thing here before I take a breather. The Mackinac Center for Public Policy's Dave Bondi released this little video from his car this week. Listen.
The Michigan House of Representatives are going to have a busy night. You're going to want to know about this and share this video out. Beginning at 6 o'clock tonight, they're going to be taking up several important issues. They could repeal the ban on partial birth abortion in Michigan. That's one thing.
Now, I found it interesting that Bondi chose to use the so-called partial birth abortion slogan, which is so popular amongst the Christian nationalists determined to treat women as second-class citizens. There is no, and I'm going to repeat here, there is no medical term called partial birth abortion. But Dave knows that. He's just trying to fire up his anti-freedom, anti-woman base. But while most abortions occur during the first trimester of a pregnancy, there are times an abortion happens later in the pregnancy. The medical term, which Dave refused to share with his viewers, is called dilation and evacuation, or DNE. And according to the Guttmacher Institute, this procedure is safe and accounts for a majority of the second trimester abortions throughout the country. Women undergo DNE procedures due to the fetus being unable to survive or is no longer viable, or when the woman's health and life are in danger. This is a painful decision for the mother and father who wanted a child, but now have to go through the awful experience of ending the pregnancy for those reasons. Now, Michiganders passed Proposal 3 with nearly 60% supporting it, which enshrined abortion rights into the state constitution. And now Michigan Democrats are trying to go a step further to strengthen those rights with the Reproductive Health Act. Please go back and listen to the episode where I spoke with Planned Parenthood of Michigan's Ashley Finis on this bill. But essentially, the RHA will eliminate Republican-passed bills of the past which put up roadblocks for women wanting abortion care, like getting rid of the 24-hour waiting period. The bill would also repeal Michigan's consent law, which forced women to undergo counseling and view pictures of fetuses. And the bill would also erase laws forcing abortion providers to abide by the same architectural and licensing requirements that surgical centers must follow, otherwise known as trap laws. These laws were all designed as roadblocks for women trying to get abortion care. Democrats are trying to get the RHA passed right before the legislature has to adjourn for the year. But for some reason, despite losing in landslide fashion on this issue, Michigan's Christian Nationalist MAGA Republican Party, along with the Mackinac Center, are all fighting against the economic and medical freedoms for all Michigan women. I don't know why you guys keep wanting to fight this. I really don't. But please, please keep doing it, because you're just going to keep losing and losing big.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need to give Pat a piece of your mind? Or do you have some stories you think Pat should cover? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if you have Michigan beer ideas for Pat, he'll love you even more. Now, here's Pat.
And you can always follow me on Twitter or X, Facebook, Instagram, and also on Threads. But the best way to get a hold of me for a conversation is through email. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. I always have my weekly Left of Lansing episodes posted each and every Thursday morning, but I'm also supplying you with more content via my Friday LOL shorts, and I started doing my Monday musings, which you can listen to wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, I have a full archive of everything located at leftoflansing.com. Time for a Left of Lansing last call. A disturbing new poll was just released, and it should give some Democrats concern, especially here in the state of Michigan. The Guardian reports that a new poll from the Arab American Institute shows a dramatic drop in support for President Joe Biden amongst Arab American voters. If you indulge me, I'd like to read the beginning portions of the story by The Guardian's Iram Salam. It says, and I'm quoting here, "Arab American support for Joe Biden has fallen in the wake of his response to the latest bout of violence between Israel and Hamas, a new poll from Arab American Institute shows. The same poll showed a sharp increase in reports of discrimination against members of the community. Following Hamas's deadly October 7th attacks, which killed 1,400 Israelis, Biden has repeatedly proclaimed the U.S.'s rock-solid and unwavering support for Israel, which has responded by tightening its blockade and bombarding the Gaza Strip. More than 8,000 Palestinians have been killed, according to health officials in the coastal territory. According to AAI, that response has prompted a dramatic plummeting of Arab American voter support for President Biden. There are roughly 3.7 million Arab Americans in the U.S. Support among Arab American voters for Biden has plummeted from 59% in 2020 to 17% today, the poll analysis said. Notably, the data found that for the first time in AAI's 26 years of polling, that a majority of Arab Americans did not claim to prefer the Democratic Party. Moreover, 40% of those polled said they would vote for Donald Trump in 2024, a 5 percentage point increase from 2020, marking an all-time high for Arab American identification within the Republican Party. Okay, so that should be sounding off a 5-alarm bell, not just for National Democrats and President Biden, but for most particularly Michigan Democrats. According to the 2020 census, Arab Americans make up 3.1% of the state's population, and Arab Americans are now the majority of residents in the city of Dearborn, and there are over 300,000 Middle Eastern Americans residing here in Michigan. I mean, that's a significant number, and it could have ramifications next year unless Democrats and Biden change their tune just a bit. So before I continue, I have to say to the 40% in that AAI poll that said that they would vote for Trump in 2024, I mean, what are they saying? Where was Trump ever, ever on the side of Arab Americans? And Trump just recently said he'd like to ban all Muslims from entering the United States of America. All Muslims. So how is it possible Arab Americans would find that a better alternative? Or, hear me out here, is it that many Arab Americans simply will decide to sit this one out? Now, there's anger within the Arab American community over President Biden's backing of Israel. Now, I'm not going to be able to solve the Middle East crisis here within the next 90 seconds of this episode, okay? That's not what I'm here to do. But I'd like to say, for me, the long-term tension and violence between the Israelis and the Palestinians are mostly due, or maybe entirely due, to right-wing religious zealotry. It's the kind of right-wing religious zealotry that we've seen here in this country, which has led to right-wing terrorism, MAGA terrorism. Hamas terrorized and brutally murdered over 1,000 of innocent Israelis last month. And that kind of barbaric violence doesn't help the Palestinian cause at all. And even more, Hamas is holding around 200 Israelis hostage, which is just outright sick and twisted. Hamas's right-wing belief that all Jews must leave the land or die shows how religious authoritarian zealotry leads to nowhere. On the flip side, the right-wing Israeli government, led by Benjamin Netanyahu, is brutally murdering thousands of innocent Palestinians via bombings, and it's beginning a ground assault which will just end up killing more Palestinians and leading to more retaliation in the future. And you know what? Someday, someone's got to tell me how bombing Gaza, where your people are being held hostage, will actually help save the hostages. I mean, isn't it possible, a tiny bit possible, that Israeli bombs in Gaza might actually kill at least one Israeli hostage? And while I had many issues with some of President Barack Obama's foreign policies, I always thought he did the right thing when he mostly met with Netanyahu without much fanfare. The Obama administration publicly supported Israel's right to exist and provided it with lots of funding, but it was Obama's way of dressing down the right-wing extremist Netanyahu in front of the country and in front of the world. Now, regardless of how all this turns out, President Biden's embrace of a warmonger like Netanyahu is hurting him with the Arab American community. Are many Arab American voters simply just voicing their displeasure and frustration right now with Biden and the American government for its embrace of Israel and its corrupt prime minister? And so right now they're saying they won't vote for Biden? Yeah, maybe that is one reason. Or will that anger subside by next November? That's possible. I don't know. And I won't pretend to know. But I'll say this. Liberals and Democrats telling Arab Americans to just simply get over it, or to say, hey, you know what, the alternative is worse, that might not be the greatest of all strategies. Maybe, and I'm just spitballing here, but maybe more can be done to help Arab Americans know that they're being heard. And that by applauding the right-wing Israeli government's fire-at-will strategy isn't perhaps the greatest of all moves. Again, I don't know, but I will end with this. Earlier in this episode, I brought up Democratic President Lyndon Johnson's Great Society and how it opened up so many doors to so many people who had the doors closed in their faces forever. Johnson also signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act into law, which right-wing judges are trying their best to tear down. They are actually tearing those down. But despite all of those domestic victories that LBJ experienced, which were highly significant, Johnson doubled down on the disastrous Vietnam War. And by 1967 and 68, many younger voters didn't really seem to care about the Great Society because they felt, what's the point of these programs if they weren't going to be alive to benefit from them? So they marched and held rallies and threw their support towards anti-war candidates like Eugene McCarthy and then Robert Kennedy once he entered the Democratic primary. Those moves, in part, caused Johnson to decide not to run for re-election in 1968. Now, of course, Democrats would go on to lose to Richard Nixon in 68, and the rest is history. But I wonder, if we had social media during those days, would older Americans or older Democrats, would they have talked down to those younger voters and tell them to get with the program or else? Would these same people have told the younger anti-war voters that they had no real choice in the matter because, in the end, did they want Nixon as their president? I'm seeing that kind of sentiment being thrown at Arab Americans on social media, and especially at younger Arab Americans. They were voting with progressives and believed in many progressive values. And they obviously didn't appreciate the Islamophobia being spouted off by the right wing in this country. And you know what, for that matter, many Jewish Americans voted Democrat because they didn't really care for the anti-Semitism similarly being blasted by the right wing. Were the anti-Vietnam War protesters right to not back Johnson? And were they right to stand up for their convictions? Are Arab Americans right to stand up for their convictions and to threaten to not vote for Biden? Think about that one. And in the meantime, perhaps Michigan Democrats ought to start thinking long and hard about that question rather than later.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it here for this edition of Left of Lansing. Again, we'll try to have Molly Sweeney and our Alyssa Hurd from 482 Forward next week. And I'm sure I will have lots to say about the final bills pushed through this legislative session as Democrats were working on passing the Reproductive Act, revamping teacher evaluations, polluter pay, clean and affordable energy, and yes, transparency laws. And you know me, I'll keep it real where I think Democrats were victorious and where I think they faltered. I can do that because we know, for the most part, Republicans will always refuse to do the right thing. I'm not sure about how you folks out there on the west side of the state dealt with those 8 inches of snow, and I know that those of you in parts of the UP also got hit with snow. Those of us here in Gratiot County just whined and complained when we got a dusting on Halloween night. Although, I don't think it's too much to ask, is it? But it would be nice if all the leaves could fall from the trees before the snow. I mean, really, is that all too much to ask, Michigan? Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.